voor vandaag onze net leester voor dit departement. Het departement wil vertellen ons wat is in hierdie pil en die leden van het parlement zal engage met de pil. Dat is net die mensen wat in hier die vergadering zal praten. Niemand hier, niemand else. Volgende week die public hearings Ji komiso. Ji is free om any taal te praten. Onze te hoeveel elf talen is er, Nederland. Zo onze net you know, translations yes om te krijgen. I just thought, members, let's explain that for all of us so that we get a clearer picture as to how we take our processes forward. Let us allow other chairs to come through so that everybody should be seated down and be comfortable. I don't know who has been helping. That person has been doing a great job. And that person must be free to continue with that job. I don't know who is that person. And once again, that person has been doing a very great job. Where is that person? Is that you, is it? You've been doing a great job. Okay. For purposes of us being able to do and continue and conclude our work, we shall then have to ask those of us who can translate to do that. But next week, for sure, it is going to be everybody's time and session to speak any language. But for purposes of this session, yeah. We are not going to translate if that is fine with everybody else. Otherwise, we can be here until 7, 8 in the evening, unless this is what we want to do. I saw your hand, Mr. Van Dere.
Yes, Mr. Chairperson. I would like to ask that next time we have a meeting for the MLRA, we do it in a bigger venue. I mean, it's an emotional one. A lot of people are interested in it, and we can expect more people to come. So we need to make provision for the people to be comfortable. We can't have the people standing for 2 or 3 hours on end in a small venue like this. So we must see if we can get a bigger venue. And then I also want to raise the issue that you raised on going to the provinces, where you, if I'm correct, the portfolio committee now owns this bill for the time it is here. So we must still decide on what we are going to do with this bill. That has not been decided by this committee yet. What is the process we are going to do? Is it going to go where and how are we going to deal with it? I think you decided that. But I would suggest that we don't hurry this up, that we do a proper job, because it's so important to get it right the first time. We can't do it trial by error, because people's lives are dependent on this. And I want to plead with you that we do whatever it takes to get it done properly. Thank you.
We are only starting a process. So let us get to hear how the department is going to take us forward. You are correct in saying this is our process. There is no contradiction at all on that one. So let us start a process, and then we take it from there. If there is no other issue from members, and I did mention that the person who was bringing the chair was doing a very, very good job, and that person must not be stopped from doing that job. In the absence of any further issues, we have been introduced a new Director General, brand new from the board, Professor Harris, is going to lead us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to present this amendment to the Marine Living Resources Amendment Bill to yourself. Ek sal sommer my eie vertaling doen soos ek aangaan voorzitter is dit vir u sal help. The purpose of this, these amendments is to enable the minister to allocate small scale fishing rights and to fishers and to in a substantial way begin to transform the inequalities in the past fishery system. So I agree with the sentiments expressed by yourself and the honourable member that it is an important bill and it's an emotive issue, and from the perspective of the department we are looking to the leadership of this committee to enable the bill to go through as quickly as possible. I would think that our compatriots who are present would be keen to hear its content. Ek sal sê dat die doel van hierdie wysiging in die wet is om die minister die magte te gee om regte aan klein vissers weer toe te ken en op daardie manier die ongelykhede wat heiliglik in die bedryf is om dit te verander. So ons sal baie graag wil hoor hoe u daaroor voel. Chairperson, honorable chairperson, as you know, I'm brand new. I started this position on the 1st of a week ago. So I will ask my colleague, Mr. Dennis Fredericks, will do the presentation. He is the acting deputy director general in fisheries. So I will hand over to him.
Thank you, Gigi. Good afternoon, honourable members and chairperson, also our fisher folk and my colleagues. What we're going to do is to take you through what is actually covered in this bill and maybe spend a few minutes to explain the urgency of the bill. The background, as explained by the DG, is basically that we don't have a legislative framework to allocate small-scale fishing rights at the moment. Now, we all know that small-scale fishing has been an acrimonious process developed over about 5 years by the communities themselves. They've drafted a small-scale fisheries policy that was adopted and was published on 20th June 2012. And from there, we have now come to the next step, which is the promulgation of the amendment bill to ensure that we are able to implement the small-scale fisheries policy. Now, it's very clear that when we were deliberating on the policy, there is a lot of inequalities in the current fishery system. And unless we are able to change the system around, these inequalities will continue unabated. And there is an outcry from the various fishing communities that we need to amend and put right the inequalities that exist within the system. So this bill is all about enabling the minister to allocate small-scale fishing rights to small-scale fishing communities. Now, we propose about 5 amendments to the bill. Now, initially when we published the bill on the 25th of April 2013 for comment, it was a quite extensive set of amendments that we have proposed. However, after we have engaged with various stakeholders, and also after we have taken comment, we have realized that it's impossible for us to proceed with a substantive amendment of the Act. And after consultation, there was agreement that we should maybe just narrow down the focus of the bill just to deal with the small-scale fishing policy, because that's the outcome. That is what people are saying. We need to have access to fishery resources. And because of what we've been guided to in terms of the small-scale fishing policy, we now need this bill to enable us to do exactly that. So we propose the following amendments. The first one is that we need to amend the definition You need to amend the MLA to insert the definition of small-scale fishing, small-scale fishing community, and small-scale fishing community area. Why do we need this? Because we need a criteria for small-scale fishing, because that will be how we will be able to identify small-scale fishers. That will be the criteria that we need in order to really get to the correct people. There have been many attempts in the past to identify the real fisher folk, and I think to a certain extent we've not been able to get it right. Now we say, after we have engaged with the fishing communities for a long, long time, they've told us this is what we think a small-scale fisher is. So that definition is very important. But also we have to identify small-scale fishing communities. Now, we all know the history of our country, but also with regard to forced removals, a lot of the fisher folks were taken from where they were living close to the sea and put in other areas. And therefore, we had to come up with a definition that would enable us to put fishers within a small-scale fishing community, albeit not close to the sea. So in the policy is talking sometimes also of a virtual community. So people are asking me, if you live in Kailitsa, can you say that's a fishing community? No, the real first answer would be no. But there are fishers living there, and they should be included. So that's why we need that small-scale fishing community definition. And then also we need a small-scale fishing community area. It's important for us to sort of ring-fence and protect the small-scale fishers to provide to them an area where they can ply their trade and where they can make a living and where they can sort of have a livelihood. So those definitions are very important, and we're asking that we amend the current Act to include those definitions. So part of this will enable the department to identify, verify, and register small-scale fishers and small-scale fishing communities. Now, there are various claims as to who's a small-scale fisher and who not. And you hear different figures are being branded around as to how many fishers there are. We say, let's now put up a real database that we can say these are small-scale fishers. And once we have identified, verified, and registered, then we just need to update the database as we go forward. There's another amendment that we seek to add to the current Act, and that's the definition of a South African person to include a cooperative registered in terms of the Cooperatives Act 14 of 2005. Why do we need this? Because when we look at the current South African persons, which will be an individual, a CC, a company, and a trust, we have found if we want to implement the current policy as it stands to bring about community fishing rights, we may need another vehicle to do that. And having looked around and discussed with our sister department, the DTI, we believe that cooperatives may play a meaningful role in just doing that, because it provides to us the opportunity to get access to funding, access to support, also to ensure that we are able to assist the fishing folk in a meaningful way. So we believe with the support that we get from the DTI, we will be able to change around what I think there is this impression that the department has in the past allocated fishing rights to cooperatives. I can safely say we've never allocated rights to cooperatives. This will be the first time. But we were always a bit scared of cooperatives in the sense that if you don't have enough support to those cooperatives, you may run into trouble. But now that we have been given the assurance and we've been putting up a task team with the DTI to work on these issues, we are comfortable that once we start with the formation of the cooperatives, we will be able to assist the small-scale fishing communities in a very substantive way. Now, there's another reason why we want to maybe make use of cooperatives. The current system within DTI brings with it a lot of support and incentive schemes for cooperatives. And we had some discussions with them, and also we had some presentations into the communities where people could ask questions and raise their concerns. And we believe we were able to put together what I would term very loosely a fishing cooperative, where we talk to the issues related to fishing specifically. And important is that there will be the benefits and support from the DTI to support, but also our department also have a particular unit for cooperatives, and we can also pull on the support to assist in this regard. Now, the next amendment that we are requesting the portfolio committee to look at is that we want to delete all references of systems in the current act and to replace it with the word small scale. So wherever we find in the current act the word subsistence, we request that it be replaced, that it be deleted and replaced with the word small scale. Now, this is important because we want to entrench small scale fishing within the current fisheries management system. We want to make sure that small scale fisheries become a meaningful participant within the current fishing industry, and they are treated as a full participant in the true sense of the word. In the current act, we have a number of objectives and principles which have been guided us up to now to manage the fishing industry. But when we were drafting this amendment act, it was quite clear to us that we need additional principles and objectives to guide the interpretation, administration, implementation of the policy, the fisheries policy, and therefore we need to insert new principles and objectives into the act. And it's important just maybe to mention that what we want to do with the new principles and objectives, and it's only three of them, is to ensure that any decision maker will have due regard to the need to promote marginalized groups such as women and youth. We also need to be mindful of the importance of food security, socioeconomic development, and the alleviation of poverty. And also, we also want to recognize the allocation of basket of species as opposed to single species allocations. Currently, whenever we do allocations in terms of the current legislation, it's always with regard to single species allocations. So we will, for instance, allocate West Coast rock lobster is a single species, hake is a single species, abalone is a single species, and so forth. We say in terms of the small scale policy, there's a recognition that for small scale fishers to really be able to carry their livelihood, there need to be a basket of species made available to them, and you cannot no longer only allocate one single species, but you need to supplement the allocation with other species as well. Now we come to a very important part of the new amendment, and it's Section 19 to replace the current Section 19 of the Act. Now the current Section 19 of the Act deals with subsistence fishing. This new one will deal with specifically the management of small-scale and the small-scale fisheries sector. Now what one will find when you read the current section, you will find that there's a lot of similarities with the new proposed amendment, but the new amendment specifically deals with small scale fisheries and how it will be managed. Now, Section 19 requires us to determine the processes and procedures related to the allocation of and management of small scale fishing rights, the criteria for recognition of small-scale fishers and communities, and any other administrative or procedural methods that may be necessary to be set out in regulations. So this becomes sort of the management part of the Marine Resources Act with regard to small-scale fishers. And to give legal certainty to the fishing communities and everybody else, there will be regulations that will set out exactly how these processes will unfold and what will be required and what will be the criteria that will be applied in implementing the small-scale fisheries policy. One of the things that we must do in terms of Section 19 is to establish fishing areas or zones for small-scale fishers. We must also recognize small-scale fishing communities. And importantly, that we, when necessary, we may, by way of prohibition of any other fishing or related activity which may negatively impact on small-scale fishing. So it's a protective measure should it be required to protect the small-scale fishes within that particular fishing area. that we can take certain steps to safeguard their livelihoods. Now, as we have put together a little slide to say what will be the impact of the economic impact of small-scale fishers when we implement it. And we have taken as a backdrop the current interim relief permit that we are issuing to small-scale fishers. In a very limited sense, we allocated exemptions to 7,333 small-scale fishers. And we have done it in terms of the different provinces with different targets resources, from lionfish, brown mussels and oysters, to viscous lobster and white mussels and so forth. But what you can see here is a very limited support base to these small-scale fishers. And there's also a lot of small-scale fishers that are still excluded from the system, because what we are doing currently is within what is viable and sustainable with the current resources. However, we are going to open up the basket of species, which will then enable us to provide much better support to small-scale fishers. We also want to indicate to you that we have issued some recreational fishing permits, which it's far in excess of what you have for small-scale fishers. It's about 36,000 recreational permits, and already you can see that the lesser component is actually having much, much more than we have in terms of support to small-scale fishers. We believe that our provisional projections that we create about 8,000 new jobs. We think that we will ultimately end up with 160 communities that we will register, and people will earn between 10 to 20,000 per person. But we say we're currently earning that, but we say we target about 72,000 as a normal earning per fisher, based on a 576 million. And we talk about 100 million investment per year. So over 5 years, we project we will spend about 576 million to correctly implement the small-scale fishing policy, provide the necessary support to small-scale fishers, and enable them to become self-sufficient in a meaningful way. And we're going to need about 100 million per annum to do that. We have the roadmap, which we have put together, and you will see this refers to the FRAP process. Now, there seem to be some confusion with regard to what's happening within the FRAP process, which is fishing right allocation process, which is your competitive process, where people could apply for specific sectors, about 8 of them, and there they have to compete against other applicants. Now, they have to be able to meet the requirements for an allocation, so it's an out-and-out competitive process. Also, they will compete against other applicants, and already one can say to yourself that if you put a small-scale fisher to go into a competitive process, they're probably never going to make it. So therefore, this process cannot be utilized for small-scale fishing. This process is for your normal fishing activity, where we have industrialized fisheries and where people are sort of entrepreneurs, they've invested, they have the capital to do what is required in terms of those fishing operations. For the small-scale fishing, we say it should be a non-competitive process. It should be a non-competitive process. We should not put fishing communities against each other. We should not say to Eland's Bay, you must be better than St. Helena Bay before you can get an allocation. We say they should not be compared have to compete against each other. Once they are verified as fishers, once they are registered as fishers, once the fishing community has been verified and registered, then the allocation becomes something automatic. Within the sustainable TAEs and TACs that we will make available also to the small-scale fishing component. So it's important to understand that maybe in the past we've tried to accommodate small-scale fishers within a competitive process and we have not succeeded. The end result was that you will have two brothers in one street, both are fishers, both are doing exactly the same things, and then they apply. But because the one may have been able to use a consultant, or maybe there was a child who's maybe educated, the one's application was accepted and the other one was rejected. And we say that should not happen again. We should be able to assist the small scale fishers in a meaningful way. And that's why this amendment is so important for us. It's important for the fact that we have tried and we have failed on many occasions. We have tried to implement systems and procedures, but this time around the committee has told us this is what we want. We think this is the best way of addressing our issues. And if you allow us to live the way that we have been doing for hundreds of years, we will be able to make it. But what we need from government is government support, and we are saying, yes, we agree. Part of the problem in the past was that we have given people fishing rights with no support at all. And no wonder they've not succeeded, because there was no way they will be able to make it on their own. This combined government is saying, no, we should support the small-scale fishing. We should make available those the equipment that they need, the support in terms of management, and that's why we believe that this time around, with the support of the small-scale fishers themselves, we are able to turn this around. And I think maybe to in closing, Chair, is to say that we have tried and tested a number of options. We have failed. And then the committees have decided they will determine their own future. They drafted the policy, and they've told us this is what we want. And as government, we have agreed that as they may have found the right mix to go forward. And that's why we're supporting this implementation plan in that way. But we need your support. And I maybe indulge you to say, time is running out. And if we can have this amendment passed by Parliament this year, it will assist us in a very meaningful way. Thank you.
You know, the note we are ending at is our note. Whether or not time is running out, it is up to us to decide. It is our process now. It's no longer yours. Hope you appreciate that. And equally understand it. You have your wish. Cannot be our command. We had Sivile Masonza, Sivile, Singacho City. The process I started in Goku. Here a process that since 1993 when it started. If you remember the RDP document, Reconstruction and Development Program document, 1993, it said there must be one department called Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. That was corrected only 2009. That phone shall be thrown outside of the room. That RDP document said there must be one department only 2009 that it happened. That document also said, among others, that the fishing rights must stop being year on year. It must be transformed from being that year on year to being medium to long term. Also, that document said the communities that live along coastal lines must be empowered. That we are correcting it 20 years later, 2013, from 1993. Now that's what is happening today. Since 1993, the RTP document, the RTP is an ANC document, we all know that, in partnership with everybody else, COSATU, Communist Party, civic organizations and everybody else. They all pulled together and come up with the RTP document. That RTP, ngoku kona si implementayo. It's an open secret. Akukho nto ifihlwayo kuloo nto. Sizenza mos ezinto openly, asafihlwa. Kunedemokrasi. So that's what is happening in simple terms. Now, now, Utata Omnye Lona was saying, where is he? Utata, which is not his, tell us to say Europe. It is engaged. But even the children was calling that he must start in the Tanganoso Bamba in Tanganiso, a committee, a Nigezera, a briefing department. Yes, the Apale would need Bagunza and Tor. But Oba Legle Ungamanda, who begets you, who corner you with the outie, she could get a gun. Sorry, apho kuzaba nokuva uba abantu bathini, whether ningabantu abakwi-fisheries, ningoo-fishermen, whether ningabantu abaoonobhizinisi abakhulu, whether ningoozibanibani, nizii-organizations or NGOs or nasirh and so on. Now, kwiiveki ezayo sizawuthi sivuleleke sixana sisonke simamele. Nkosi. So I just thought, let me just clarify that part so that we get a sense of understanding as to what is going on here today. So at least we have an understanding. Siyavanamos. On the terms that every platform know on the terms what the department has said. On every bill. So the first week, Ama. I'll participate. Okay. The process is open for members to participate. I see your hand, Ngosi. Kebukuru, Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Stein, in that order so far. Oh, okay. I thought to is that fine, Ngosi?
Okay. I'm sorry about that, Chairperson, and also the department. I will get your responses even if I'm not here. Chairperson, firstly, I also want to welcome the new DG. I didn't get the opportunity this morning. I think this is the official first meeting with the department, so I want to welcome you and I wish you well. I don't think it's an easy job, but you will get our support as long as you try your best, and hopefully we can solve a few issues that needs to be solved, and the fisheries is one of them that needs urgent attention. Chair, I want to start off with, I'm just concerned that I see the document is now, it says confidential, and also the ones that were sent out for tomorrow. I don't know if it's an oversight from the department or it's supposed to be confidential or what is the reason for that. It's not confidential because it's a public document, so just I just as a comment. Then, Chair, I would really like to hear from the fisheries department or from the fishing community, but I want the answers today from the department on the whole issue of cooperatives. I come from the land reform portfolio, as you all know, and in land reform, the agriculture community also has cooperatives. There's massive, massive problems today with land reform. And the only, not the only, one of the problems is because of the cooperatives. Because people were clustered together to make it easier to farm, also for the same, I can see the same story going, exactly the same as what is envisaged now with the fisheries. And it makes sense if you think about it. I think on paper it makes sense, but in practice it just doesn't work. We sit with massive problems in the land reform section because people were put together in cooperatives. Some people did not want to be together, but because the department felt it was easier to handle massive communities in that way, it was kind of forced through and people didn't have a choice. So I want to hear from the department in your consultation processes. What was the community's reaction towards that? How many people were against that? And I'm sure we will get it out of the communities next week. And what is your alternative? If the cooperative doesn't work, do you have any alternatives on how to do that? And then also I want to know what is the kind of support, because exactly the same thing on land reform. People were formed in cooperatives, they were now told, here's your land, go and farm, with no support. We are sitting now 15 years later on land reform with massive problems. You know about the RECAP program that happens in land reform. 15 years later, now we need to take up new plans and communities, and only now they support. So what is your plan in place? Firstly, if people then form cooperatives so that you can organize how it will work. And then secondly, I'm preempting, but I don't know. If we get a massive tegenkanting against cooperatives resistance, what is your plan? Can this continue without people forming cooperatives? That's the only questions that I have for now, Chair. I'm sure after the process that we will go through, I will have more questions to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the first point has been taken by Honourable State. It was mine was just to inquire whether the department has been explained here with regards to the cooperatives, whether the department was thinking of ahead of saying they will buy them boats or they will sort of add financial assistance on what field that they're assisting the people. But fortunately, the honourable member has taken it maybe in a better language than mine. The second one, which I had in mind was looking at the term that is going to be deleted, the term of subsistence fisheries. My understanding, Chairperson, is that not everybody who relies on fish for living will be maybe going for a business, so to say, because the understanding that I have in subsistence farming maybe is that of those families who only go out to fish in order to feed their stomachs rather than being on business. If then we say we are now going to look after the small scale fishers, where do we put these farmers? Are we going to have them the right to as well of fishing for food on the table a day? I'm saying this, Chairperson, simply because, you know, there was a time when fishers were not allowed to fish a certain number of fish out of the sea. They were restricted to say, you can maybe fish, if I may make an example, you can maybe take two per day for a living. But then if I have, I'm a married person, I have six kids and my wife, we are seven or eight in the house. Are we expected to be as well, be employees of those small scale fisheries who would be doing business? My own understanding or my own thought, Chairperson, would be that of saying in the bill we make provisions for those who will be fishing for living, not for business. Because if we say people are all going to go into business, we might be, in my own thinking, we might be dreaming of something that will not assist us at the end of the day. I think let me stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Mr. Panda?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make it clear from the beginning, and I've said it before, that we, the DA in this committee, will support any way and means of alleviating the poverty and the injustices of the past to our fishermen. We'll support anything to that link. We also support the small-scale fishing policy. What we don't, we have a lot of questions. We have a lot of questions that arise on where the fish is going to come from to feed all these people, to get all these people the quotas. We are also concerned about the process that is followed. And we need to have those questions addressed for us to fully support the implementation of this amendment bill. If this bill merely just incorporated the small-scale fishing policy into the bill, that would have been fine. I don't think we would have had the problem. What we don't support, and what Honorable Pilazo has said before, let's implement it and let's see what happens, and then we can fix it afterwards if it doesn't happen. That's not the way Parliament should work. Parliament should come up with a solution that is workable and that is sustainable. We're not in the business of trying something. We're in the business of fixing something and fixing it permanently. We don't want to go back to something like that. So let me say that. We support the small-scale fishing policy in that. On the 17th of May, now we'll come to a more the point of the cooperatives. On the 17th of May, this committee made a recommendation that we move away from cooperatives. Cooperatives, in the sense of cooperatives, have been tried in South Africa. It doesn't work. It's been tried in other places in the world. And if you can bring me a very good, it's the overwhelming majority of these cooperatives that have been tried that work, then I will buy into it. But I know our people. They like to fight underneath each other when something like this happens. How would somebody that has a right now have to pull that right into a cooperative? There are, in Paternoster, I want to use as an example, there are 80 people with a quota. Now there are about 200 people that want to be in this cooperative. Now these 80 people will have to give up their quota into the cooperative, and then they have to share it beyond with 200 people. Now, the department is not saying anything about we are going to increase your quotas, how big the quotas are going to be, and if it's sustainable. Those are not questions. We are just said, trust us, form the cooperative, go into it, and we will make sure it works. There is another cooperative in Paternoster which has a 50-ton quota. Now, all the 80 fishermen in Paternoster only take out about 14 tons of say, rock lobster. So is this cooperative now going to pool his 50 tons with this community, and then it's all going to be a share, and we lift the community out of poverty? See, the problem that we have is that you must be sustainable. To be sustainable, there must be enough fish and enough rock lobster. You can't dish out 50 tons to a community and then in a year's time there is no fish left. I mean, we have reservations on that. We want to know what is the plan to address those issues. You know, then you have the basket of fish. Nobody knows how this basket is looking like. No, nobody has spoken. We just know a basket. What does a this bar should look like? How will that work in a and this is the problem. You know, the community don't trust you because you don't talk to the community. That is the problem. You don't explain to them word for word. You don't take their hand and explain to them this is what you're going to do. And that's why they don't trust you. Why should they believe you now? This is my problem. So a lot of the fishing communities that I speak to, they don't want cooperatives. You know what? Cooperatives might be a good idea. And that is when fishermen, 10 of them come together and they decide, look, we need to pool our resources to take out our quota, and for that we can go to the bank, and if we have a pooled resource, we can then share what we have anyway at the moment. The 167 is far too little already to survive on. So but nobody tells them what is going on about this. So there's all these questions and more questions. Then you ask them to apply for quotas now. But then they think, if we apply now and we get it, we won't get our interim relief again. So, but nobody tells them that maybe, because they only think they can have one right. They can't have two rights, but there's a basket now, maybe we'll get a... But all these maybes and ifs and buts, it's not doing you any favors. So, the minister has also said that 70% of all the available quotas will go to previously disadvantaged fishermen. Now these fishermen...
That's not your phone.
Eh?
That's not your phone ringing.
It's not my phone. I don't mind the phone ringing. I can talk. So I'm just afraid that you will take off my time. I've got a lot of concerns that I want to raise. Please indulge with me, Mr. Chairperson. It's very important. The minister has said that 70% of all the quotas will go to previously disadvantaged communities. Now my concern is also 26,000 people work in the fishing industry. Where are those 26,000 fishers going to go to? If you take away the quotas of industrial companies. And I mean, there might be a very good explanation for that, but you're not telling that to the people. The minister just says 70% will go to previously disadvantaged. We are going to ring fence quotas for the women and the youth. What happens if nobody takes up that ring-fenced quota? Is it just going to lie there idle and poor people that need it can't get to it because it's now ring-fenced in a bill, in a law? This doesn't make sense to me. And then, where am I? Yeah. No, there's a lot of questions. Please indulge with me. Then you talk about the subsistence that will be now become small scale. Subsistence fishers, there are about 6,000 in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. These are people that go out every day to collect some fish or something from the sea to eat at night. They eat it, they don't sell it, they eat it. They are subsistence. Now you are going to put them in small scale. Now small scale is going to have a lot of more restrictions. They have to put catches on, buy catches, and off. You have all this red tape, and these people, they are just poor rural communities. Most of them don't even read or write. They just want to go and fetch some mussels for tonight for the pot and eating. And you are going to take away that, and you're going to make it so difficult for them that they can't do it anymore. Okay, so there are these 6,000 Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal fishermen that are also now going to be, according to me, disadvantaged by you substituting their name for small scale. Then there's these 26,000 people working in the industry that we are also worried about. I'm sure that the people that want quotas now are not too worried about them at the moment because they want their quotas. But in the end, those people are going to sit at home and not earn the money. And they're not going to have food. Who's going to look after them? Okay, and then you talk about the ring fencing of the quotas for women and children. You know, I was in Mitchell's Plain. There's a fishing community. They have boats. And I went to visit them, and I said, you know, we don't even have a harbor here, but we are fishermen. Like you said, in this community, they are there in Mitchell's Plain. Why can't the minister ring fence us also a little, some of the fish, you know, just for us? Because we have to travel far from Mitchell's Plain to the harbor, and we also want our little area where we can fish. But you can't start a bill with exclusions, and you have to treat everybody the same. That's what the bill does. I mean, you can't have restrictions in a bill. Because what the same question applies here now. What happens if nobody takes up that right? Then those fish goes wasted, or it's, somebody else could have lived off it. recreational fishermen. Now, those are people like me that goes once a year to the post office and buy a license. And you know, once a year I go and stand next to the water with a fishing rod and I catch maybe one fish, or I don't catch anything. But you say there are more of them than small-scale fishes. But you can't. You can't even treat them like apples. Like you must fucking like apples with apples. How can you? Compare somebody that goes once a year and catch fish and somebody that's life is dependent on it. How can you compare the two? I mean, obviously you can't do that. Then there is the 585 million rand price tag that is on this bill. Now, if you don't come here and tell me exactly what that 585 million rand is going for, I will not support this bill. I'm telling you. It's a hefty price tag. Is it food parcels? Is it, what is it you are going to give it on? You know, is it election money? I need to know what this is about. And Parliament needs to know. Sorry that I'm so passionate about it, but I'm really upset about these things. You know, and then you have the...
Let's come back to you.
Then you have the compliance part. You know?
Yeah, that's your last one. We'll come back.
The last one, that's the last one.
Come back.
The compliance part. You know... The department has already made these rules that are so restrictive that it's made our people into poachers and to criminals. You know, they have to steal to survive. And you know, if you ask any fisherman, he says, yes, well, I steal, but I mean, I don't see their speed. But the department now brands them as poachers and criminals. It's wrong. It should have been fixed a long time already. And if I would totally be for compliance and people making sure that nobody steals, if everything works right and if you communicate with the fishermen and you make sure that everybody is equal. Not that I can't fish now, but then the big guys come and fish there where my fish is. You know, they put their nets in there where I have to go and fish. But I'm stocked now, but they are not stocked. Why is that? Why don't you have compliance in that? You know, so I will end up with that, Chairperson.
I can see you're very passionate about this. And I can see where the blood pressure is heading towards. And I can see that blood pressure is doing serious electioneering. And that blood pressure says, communities do not trust government. That's what that blood pressure is saying. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to respond to Honorable Kandale. You know, he's contradicting himself.
Yeah.
When he started, he said you are supporting this bill. And you will make sure that it goes through as quick as possible. Now, when you listen to him when he's talking something else. I don't know what is actually, but you put it very correctly that you started this process of election. I don't think this is the intention of this bill. The intention of the bill is to help these people that are suffering from this fishery thing, not to do election as he's doing. And also to say that our communities don't trust the department. I don't think this is a correct statement to come from the member of parliament. And they don't want cooperatives. If I listen to the presenter very carefully, he said to us, this bill is coming from the very strong community that is here. Some of them are here, some are not here. But now, Van Dalen is saying that no, they are not trusted. I don't think it is correct. I think we need to talk of what you have come to do here, not to do things that are not supposed to. Thank you, sir.
I did say at the beginning that this is a meeting between the department and parliament committee, and that these are the only two that are participating. Clapping of hands is equally a participative exercise. So may we try and hold our horses. Next week is our time. What's a worm? So okwangoku okokwethu kukumamela nje xa bamba siphethe i-notepad siyenze i-notes zethu. Ithini la deadline you submit? Ukuba ngaba sinento esifuna ukuyibhekisa kule parliamente next week 15-16-17 ixesha lokuba ngaba sifake loo nto leyo nesicelo eso sokuba ngaba sicela uncediswa kwitransport sisuka apha njalo njalo nento ozawube uyithetha apha epalamente ube uyayifaka iphelelwa ngolwesihlanu lo siya kuye loo nto leyo siyivilemos. The deadline van ons om ons onze presentations as die 11 van oktober hier is vrijdag. Even onze on ander hotels misschien om transport is yes misschien ons zoek de transport en enige help. I think the deadline is so the Friday. D'accord. Ne? So on the form. Okay. Thank you. Mante, I don't know. There is an acquisis. For an acquisis members, Lydia. Malung. Lapa Gutung. Hopefully, the issues have been raised by a number of members, DG. I'm very keen also on the definition on the South African. That definition, is it saying, where is it exactly? I was just reading it through this field itself. There's a definition there that talks about a South African. Who is a South African? It talks about a South African. Which page again? Page 3. There on top, yeah. By definition, a South African. I wanted to understand what is that definition. Members are South African citizens, where any member is a juristic person. Such person's principal place of business must be in South Africa. What is a South African, insofar as our definition is concerned here? So that we are clarified. Because we obviously we always have a challenge when it comes to this definition. That also we shall have been having, you know, what we call it, you know, this permanent residence thing. And you know, here he talks about any person who is having a principal place of business in the Republic. Being a, I take it that person shall have had a permanent residence or some work permit. I don't know what duration, but having to have a permanent residence in South Africa, or business right in South Africa. That would have been my only question for now. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, if I can start with your question maybe, in response to that. When we forwarded this definition of a cooperative to the state law advisors, we initially only indicated that all the members of the co-op must be South African citizens. We didn't want any foreign people to be having rights within the fishing sector, because that's normally how we have started off with the allocation process, that only South African citizens, which is either individual, a CC, PTY Limited, or a trust, can have fishing rights. Now we include a further category, which is a cooperative, and we need to be very clear that whoever is sitting within the cooperative as a member should be a South African citizen. That's the first part. The second part was where a legal person is also a member of the cooperative. Maybe a company is a member or of the cooperative, a legal entity. That legal entity must have its principal place of business in South Africa. So it be make quite clear that if it's not a natural person, we first of all have to follow the natural person up to where we can identify that person is a South African. That's the first thing. The second part is if it's a legal person, which is maybe a company or a trust or whatever, then that person must have its principal place of business in South Africa. So to exclude completely any foreign right holding in South Africa in terms of fishing rights. That's the idea behind that drafting. To make sure that only South Africans can be part of a cooperative and nobody else.
You wanted to interject?
Meneer, wat maak jy as daar 'n Suid-Afrikaanse burger is wat 'n vrou is? What do you do where you have a South African citizen who is a woman? Nou trou sy met 'n buitelander. Daai ouwe sê maar van Vietnam. Hy kom trou nou hier met daai vrou. He gets married, a Vietnamese gets married to a South African woman. Wat maak jy in daai geval? As daai vrou kwalifiseer volgens hierdie wetsontwerp, en sy trou met daai man, want daai man is 'n burger van 'n ander land, wat is die situasie? I ask these questions because these are the possible scenarios that may play out in future. You see, I want to warn all of us here. Once we make a law, that law must be implementable. So we've got to take into account all these possibilities. To me, a South African citizen is someone who was either born here and that person received a document, an identity document, which says that that person is a South African citizen. Alternatively, it's also a person that came from a foreign country and obtained citizenship in this country. And you know, my brother, you know, it's baie makkelijk in South Africa om 'n identiteitsdokument te koop, broer. Baie makkelijk. Dit gebeur elke dag. So that's where we've got to be very careful. I don't know how far can you go, because somewhere along the line you want to protect our own people, but you've got all these imponderables that crop up from time to time, and I'm just saying that there may be a possible hazard in future. We need to find a way of possibly clearly circumscribing that, because if I could come here and he's got an opportunity, he sees it. Ach, al wat hy doen is, hy trou met 'n vrou hier. Oormore is hulle nou weer los van mekaar. Arme vrou sikkel op haar eie. Hierdie dinge gebeur.
We can only agree with you that we can only counter what we can possibly perceive now. And that we've done with the current act as well. In the current act we have the same permutations. And there we have reference to a South African citizen in terms of Citizens Act and so forth. And so the current act was also mindful of that. So we have dealt with it in the current act as well. But remember, there are other important criteria that people need to meet before they can become part of the fishing community. And that's why the criteria for subsistence fishing and fishing community become so important, that we need to have that in law. Chair, do you want me to respond to the other questions? I will try to cover the cooperatives. I think this is one of the things that we have considered for a very long, long time. I was part of the drafting team when we were doing the small-scale fishing policy. And one of the issues that we've always had debated is, once we accept the idea of a community allocation, what would be the correct tool or the vehicle to use? Because you can use any vehicle, but we can see in the current situation, the current fishing allocations, we've tried the other vehicles. It had the same problematic issues that we have picked up. And after we've engaged DTI with regard to cooperatives, we believe that maybe this is not a better way to assist small-scale fishing communities. You've asked the question, is it working? Yes, South Africa has prime examples of cooperatives working. And I think what was important in those ones, if we've made some investigations and research, the ones that there was enough government support and intervention were the ones who were successful ultimately. And where people were ultimately assisted and capacitated in terms of understanding the running of cooperatives, understanding how you engage within this particular vehicle and how you engage with each other. Once you have that proper understanding, then people then tend to understand it's for the benefit to work together. We had an exercise during this interim relief period, which was sort of a voluntary exercise. Some people in the Northern Cape have come together after they received some vessels from DGI. And they have put together their small little exemptions, interim relief exemptions. And when they've piled their resources and they've utilized it in a way that they could get value from it, they were able to make more money than anybody else using the current system of individual selling of quotas to bigger companies and so forth. And they actually have proof in a voluntary, loose manner that if you pull these resources together, albeit very small, you can make a substantial difference. And they will attest to you when they come to in front of you, because I've asked them to come and tell you these stories, because sometimes people don't believe it when the department say it. But we've been informed by these communities that it can work. And some of them didn't work because people were fighting. And so we are also aware that when we ultimately have identified and registered these communities and fishers, we need to assist with the forming of the co-op, understanding the agreements between each other, understanding what each one's role will be, how they will work together, and so forth. But important is that you need to provide to them the productive assets, the means to the markets, the way to increase the value of the fish. Give you a little example. If you give a interim relief fisher now 167 kilograms of lobster, they probably will earn between 10 to 13,000 if they are lucky. But there are people who can earn much more than that, because if they can pool resources, market it properly, they can up to 720 rand a kilo, because that's what the real market value is. But because they are a little small fish on its own, selling to sell to a middleman who's taking the cream of it and then leaves them with nothing basically behind, we say if we can set up these cooperatives where we support them properly with the help of the DTIs, and assist them with accessing markets and making sure that they actually get value from the supply and the value chain, then the little they have can become so much more. And we've now just proved it over the last couple of years. So we are saying, yes, we are mindful of the pitfalls with co-opters. We are very mindful that people may find themselves trapped into situations which they don't want to. But I think this time around, government can stand alongside and allow these things to happen. This time we need to get involved and assist them in a practical way. And we have now also requested other institutions like WWF, Massey Foundation, and so forth, that we bring together all those NGOs that can provide support in terms of capacitating the small-scale fishers in various ways, that we do that. But one of the other things that we also say, if we bring them together to improve the quality of faces of the catches. Now people just catch and they lose basically 50% of the value because there's no support even in the quality assurance when they catch fish. Once we have the support available, it becomes a different story. So, yes, there may be problems with cooperatives, but we have looked into these issues and we believe with the correct support and intervention, this can work. That's the one thing. We have consulted quite a lot of people, and as I stand today, with because I've been working through the NATLAC process, through all these processes with the small scale policy, I can say to you, as far as I'm concerned, the majority of small scale fishing communities want this. There may be a few people who don't want this because they have been getting the benefit of having people disorganized, selling their money or their rights off to anybody, so they get the commissions and so forth. They will say to you, no, this cannot work, give it to the individuals. But when you look into the lives of the individuals, you find they don't have any benefit. So we then leave them just to perish like that. We say, no, we must come to the aid. And this is where government needs to step up to the plate. The issue about subsistence, I can say to you, since the implementation of the Marine Resources Act, we never have ever given a right to a subsistence fisher. They've all been treated like anybody else. And even now, the subsistence fishers in KZN, in the Eastern Cape, all have similar exemptions than the people in the Northern Cape and the Western Cape. And they all have been, in fact, they have now also realized we don't have to only be subsistence fishers. We can have a bit more. In fact, they've been asking us, why are we not allowed to sell? I said, well, then let's change the situation, because if this is what you want, there is no impediment for you to get it. You should be allowed. So even if you want to remain a subsistence fisher, we will not stop you. But if you want to be a little bit more than that, then we say, let's assist you. And that is coming from the people of KZN and Eastern Cape themselves. Now, in terms of assisting them buying boats, DTI has now, over the couple of months ago, they have been buying boats for small-scale fishers. But they were targeting people with interim relief permits. And they can tell you what difference it made. Because before that, they had to rely on somebody else to get the fish out of water. And most of the time, they couldn't get out of water because people first looking after themselves before they look into those people who don't have vessels. So now DTI has given to quite a number of co-ops vessels, and we are supporting them. We're saying people don't have the productive tools, so let's do that. But let's now come together, and once we start implementing the small-scale policy, let's do it in a constructive way. Let's give them purpose-built vessels. Let's give them vessels that can be multi-sectoral, instead of just allowing them to catch lobster. Get them a vessel that can actually fish line fish and make sure that maybe if they're going to catch squid, they need purpose-built vessels. So between DTI and ourselves, we sat down and said, if we're going to support them, let's make it purposeful, make it constructive. Because just to give a person a vessel doesn't really mean it's going to improve his life. Because that vessel may not even be the one that he's requiring. So I totally agree that we need to support them in the sense of assisting with that kind of technical advice. The basket of species, we've made available a list of species to all the consultations that I have presented. We've made available actually the list of basket of species that we have determined that people can utilize. We have 5 basket areas along the coast from Port Nolloth to the Mozambican border. And we have set out in that document exactly what is available in each basket area. So people have a very good sense of what is available. But I think what people tend to forget, when we set TACs, then we also then apportion to the different sectors a part of the TAC or TAE. Now once we have small-scale fishing in as a component, because that is what we want, in terms of the setting of the TAC, the minister can then say, I'm going to give 50% or 30% of small scale of this particular species when we set the TAC. And that will be for their allocation. So it will not be confused with local commercial allocation. So you've also raised the issue, honorable member, of the issue of jobs. Yes, we are very mindful. They should not take away jobs. That's why we engage in big business. We are discussing with them the implication of all what we are doing. But we also need to understand that we can no longer keep away from the small-scale fishers that which they are entitled to. And when we are saying to the bigger business, you have a meaningful role to play. And we want you to play the role, but equally we need you to understand we need the near-shore resources for the small-scale fishers, because that's where they can actually utilize the resources more effectively. And in a way then we have some trade-offs to say, also bigger business can continue with their business and ensure job security, but we must make the way meaningful allocations to the small-scale fishing sector as well. So one should not tend to forget that there seems to be a general, as I said, a confusion with what is happening currently now. What we are doing now in terms of allocation processes is not small-scale. It should not be confused with small-scale. It's a allocation for local commercial fishing. And everybody competing there will have to compete against each other so that we can all get the best possible application to be allocated to. And that is what's happening in that particular stream. It doesn't mean that we are not going to give allocations to small scale, because when we set the TAEs and TSCs, we will apportion to small scale what is they should be entitled to. Our only concern at this point in time is we don't have the legislative means to do that. That's why we need to have this amendment, because then we can actually now allocate to small scale. We can allocate to commercial. We can allocate to recreational. There was this instance that people in South Africa are very fortunate. You can go to the post office, you have the means to buy a recreational fishing permit. Then you can actually catch enough for your daily upkeep in terms of the different species that's available. But if you want to sell, that permit is not sufficient. Then you need to have either small-scale fishing, right, or you have to have a local commercial fishing line. And we are saying what we have been working with over the couple of years with small-scale fishers, they don't want recreational fishing permits. They want permits where they can fish for food security, but also to sell, because there's no way you can only live from fish. That has been told many, many times. I can only eat so much fish. I need other things as well. And for me to get that, I need to be able to sell. And we need to have that provision to allow them to sell it as well. I think I've covered most of it. The issue of ring fencing for women and youth, that issue came up in the policy debate way back. And as you know, the current fishing industry doesn't really favor women. And we have now tested this with the risk of the allocations, we've tested with line fees, we've tested with quite a number of them. Sometimes it's not possible for females to go to sea for various reasons. But our current policies say if you want to participate, you must be able to go to sea. That is what our policies say for competitive fishing. But for small scale, the picture will change. Then they can be part of the small scale fishing community in a different way. We also say that our fishing community is getting old, people are getting out of fishing, and youth need to be empowered if they want to. If they want to continue with fishing, they should be given the opportunity to do so. But it doesn't mean we're going to only ring fence for them. We are saying we need to look at the marginalized groups, which in our view at this point in time is women and youth, and we need to accommodate as far as it's possible for us to do so. The issue of Mitchell's Plain, if I can maybe just mention this. This is the plea not only of Mitchell's Plain. This is the plea of every small-scale fishing community I've been to. Please give us something that we can say we now have a right, that we are entitled to. This is not on a year-to-year basis, but on a longer term, so we can also plan our lives. So I totally agree that not only Mitchell's Plain, but every other fishing community that have the same plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, one must accept that the officials have painstakingly over a long period worked on this particular issue, and they have come up with something that's now on the table, for which I want to thank them. Chairperson, you know, the sort of questions that we ask is merely to try and see in what way can one better the situation. Now, in that spirit, Chair, I would like to know that the official has spoken about if given the correct support. Now, correct support, not only giving a person a vote or something, I think that correct support must be a again, you talk of a basket, a basket of things that can be done. And the best way that people can be empowered is when the product that they bring out of the sea, that you could add value to that product. I mean, I would like everybody here to know all I know about fishing is zero. I come from the upper part of the country. But when I'm hungry and the wife is not around, I go and buy a tin of Glenrick, or there used to be a Saldanha Bay brand at some stage. Stay up, whoop. You mark them off this harmony, you put it in the plate and have some bread and you chow. You mark it for. Now, that is the level to which we need to take our people. Now, Chairperson, you see, passing legislation is not the end of the story. It is the beginning. And what I would like to hear from the department and from the communities if they come here after the 11th. You know what can be done to add value to the product that you're going to bring out of the sea. And you should come and say here that these are the sort of things that we can do. And then, Chairperson, what it needs is it needs dedicated, conscientious officials and fishers. There has to be that kind of partnership. Not an official that works 8 to 5 or 8 to 4:30, and as long as he gets his pay at the end of the month, he's not concerned with anything else. Needs somebody that really sort of lives with the fisher people. Now, that is my question. When you say that if we can give them the correct support, you see, Chairperson, I'm a super optimist. I don't believe in the word impossible. Everything human made is possible. But then again, you know, I can't jump out of the car and say, yeah, man, the Here gaat me oppas. It's not going to happen. I must take the sort of risks and chances that are worth taking. So that is the one issue. The other issue, Chairperson, is that in terms of Section 19, if you read it carefully, Section 19 has a few too many maze. Now, all right, we're not in the legislation-making process already, but perhaps it could be explained why do we have them. If you take 19.1a, it says must subject to any law relating to marine protected areas. When you go to B, may within a prescribed period recognize a community to be a small-scale fishing community. Now, those prescribed periods, you see again, if you don't have conscientious officials, I know how the files get stacked up and, you know, they look at it when it suits them. So you need to have some or other way of saying what a prescribed period shall be. You can't have an application from a community or a set of people and it just lies there for weeks and months on end. There must be an end to it. That is what bothers me. That when we make a law, we sometimes leave things too flexible, and it depends. It's all in the eyes of the beholder. The person that reads the law will interpret it the way it suits that person. A prescribed period could be until thy kingdom comes. So if you could perhaps tell us what was die beweegrede? Why was this sort of wording brought about? You may have good reasons for it. Finally, Chairperson, there will have to be dedicated funding, because the issue here is not just to let people catch fish and go and sell it again to the big boys. and get 30% of the value or 40% of the actual value, that will again bring about exploitation of poor people. And I'm sure that's not the intention of the lawmaker. So we need to have some or other norms and standards where we say clearly that this is what we mean by this and this is what we intend to do by saying this or saying that. And if we don't do that, Chair, sorry, you know, I've known governments for the last 50 years. And they do things the way it suits them. That official that must implement the law will do things the way it suits him or her if there is no prescription that this is what that official is supposed to do. So I'm just saying, Jefferson, that we've got to see to it that the intention of the lawmaker to upgrade small-scale people, that intention must have a clear direction as to what it intends achieving in the life of a fisher person within 5 years. Where do you want those small-scale fishers to be? I mean, it's not just a question of remaining small-scale all the time. You want them to grow. You want the enterprises to grow. That's the only way we are going to be able to arrest poverty along the coastline. So you need to think in terms of value addition. And whilst you don't want to prescribe everything in law, but there must be some or other policy statement or a statement of intent that this is where we want the people to be in 5 years' time, for example. And you need to tell us what the budgetary implications will be for at least, say, since enactment of such a law, at least for 5 years. What will the budgetary implications be? So that the fiscus provides that budgetary implication. Otherwise, it will be good intentions and nothing happens in the end. And that's not what we want. Thank you.
Mr. Pandela?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Friedrich had talked about the cooperatives at work, and maybe you can supply us some names and places where they are so we can go and oversight, or I can go there and go and see the people and talk to them and see, you know, what is working there, and so I can make a better consist. I will want to know where they are, and if you can give us that names and those places, then we can go and visit them and see what's working there, cooperatives that are working. I would like to go and see them because I don't know of them. And then you know, I ask you the question about the cooperatives specifically, because the people from Parte Nostra said you went there and you told them if they don't belong to a cooperative they are going to get no rights. And those are threats that you made to the community there. So now everybody is running around and trying to get these cooperatives going. And there's going to be a women's cooperative, a youth cooperative, and a male cooperative, and a private cooperative. So you're going to have plenty cooperative because that's what you are, by the sound of it. But then, and then what are you going to do in places, say, Houston gets a cooperative? All the fish and the near shore is all depleted. Where are they going to get their quota from? The people from Austin, because there's no balance left there, I think. So, so how is that going to, that cooperative going to work? And then, you know, I would like to get that list of that baskets. I've never seen that list. So maybe you can distribute that to the committee so we can use it in our deliberations. It would be nice if that list is available so we can also share it with the community that don't know about it yet. Then I want some clarification on what you said on the 70%. Is that of the available near shore quotas? It's only 70% of the available near shore quotas that the minister is talking about. Because the communities out there have the idea that it's the whole lot. You know, it's not just the near shore quotas. And somebody has given them this misunderstanding of what it is. And for what reason, I don't know. But they think that 70% of all the quotas are coming to them for previously disadvantaged. Those are promises that were made in Parliament. And then I just wanted to know, find out the application process for those applications closed on Friday last week. How many applications actually came in? Was there a big uptake or was it a small uptake? Did the people take your hand and go through the motions with these forms filled in duplicate, in Nieuwerarche files and in English language, and you know, the commas are dotted and the T's are everything is done perfect before they would accept them. So all these stringent measures, I would just like to know how many quotas were actually handed in. Surely you should have that by now. Thank you.
We shall also have to remind each other that we are dealing with the legislation and not with the process of the application. That's one quick one from where I am seated, which is not part of your five objectives, in my little understanding. You see, in your RTP housing project, I can't remember how many years you have to be stuck with your house before you can consider selling it. And so far as this legislation that we're dealing with here, because you shall have heard in the past where in people and communities out there would have had quotas. Within no time, those should have been sold, especially to the boat owners. Are we not factoring any mechanism that restricts those communities, people out there, from selling their quotas or their fishing rights? Because if we are to say there are systems in place of support for our people out there, you know, I was listening attentively to Mr. Van Dalen, and I listened very attentively to you, and I also listened to you, you know, using the language, our people. Now, the extent in which, you know, people out there are to be restricted from selling their fishing rights, if that is not included, can we comment about, you know, such a possibility? You see, for me, this is very fundamental. Otherwise, whatever amount of work we shall have done here, our people shall have had their fishing rights and we shall be smiling. For what I know, especially as we talk about, you know, access to vessels or boats as one of the requirements, within no time, it is easy for people out there to relinquish those vessels. Precisely because, I mean, those fishing rights, precisely because they shall have had access to those boats and the conditions that go with those access to those boats, they're quite onerous. At the end, they get so squeezed to a point where within no time they don't have any fishing rights. Mr. Gala and Mama Nyalungu.
No, thanks, sir. Mine is just a comment. It's to say that we can say that our officials are patriots in the manner Mr. Fredericks responded to what we raised. And I was looking at his face, whether he was telling us lies. I could see that what he tells us, he knows what he's talking about. He's got the first-hand information. I would like to appeal to us as the committee, whenever we deliberate with issues with the officials, we need to have some respect for them as well. We should
should not just hesitate and have other things about them that know whatever they tell us is not true or is it true. We must just listen attentively and then we respond respectfully as well. Thanks, sir.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mr. Sala. I think that's a mouthful. I don't have to comment further. Mrs. Nyalungu?
Thank you, Chair. You have already took one of my questions about the title bit, like in RDP houses, whereby the government gives people houses before the limited time people sell those houses. So at least you have already asked the question. My second question, departments have told us about the allocation of a basket of spaces as opposed to single spaces allocation. I just want to check whether the basket of those spaces to be allocated to non-scale spaces have already been identified, or are you still going to identify those
DG?
I'll just make we can make the first two comments and also a bit of or just on the issue of the question that you are
you can also speak through the mic if you don't mind.
I'm sorry,
you know that you are new.
Sorry.
And the mic can be closer to you.
There was a provision in the old legislation, and you will see on the amendment of section 19 on page 4 of the amendment bill, I think it's under section 19 number 2, no small scale fishing right or permit shall be transferable except for the approval of and subject to the conditions determined by the minister. So I think that has been retained, but what I hear members cautioning is saying that such a provision may also have been made with RDP houses and others, and unless we have a way of monitoring that and empowering that, it can still happen. So and I think all we can do, Chairperson, is to hear. I think we have to learn from other experiences as well. I think we have, to the best of our knowledge, said we have to, if we make these amendments, we must empower the beneficiaries, the individuals, the communities, etc. We must empower them and support them throughout the value chain. So nobody has to give up. And therefore there must be a way in which we have to be on the ground all the time and see what it is we are able to do. There are so many examples. For example, we've learned that you cannot just throw money at something. And we understand the issue of conflict-sensitive development. When in a community there's a group of people who get resources, it can create conflict, but nor do we believe we should underestimate our people and their ability to work together. So I trust that we have to make this work, and not just, I think the caution from the House is also, don't just respond to it in an administrative way and with 8-to-5 regulations when we're not on the ground and see how it will work. But just for now to say that provision around ownership and not being almost protecting the people who get the rights from selling it is there, and the proof in the pudding will have to be in the eating.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may respond to the questions raised by Honourable Member Abrahams, just the following. Yes, we believe the support should be an all-inclusive one. And if I can give you some ideas to what is in the small-scale fishing policy, but also in the implementation plan, we talk there about marketing support, value addition, training and capacity building, processing, product development, business skills, and assistance to purchase equipment like vessels and gear and so forth. But I think what is more critical for us is that we are there to assist them every step of the way. Give you a simple idea. I am responsible for the lobster division, and there's many, many issues there. But one of the things I've also learned that you must listen when the fishers speak to you, and they came to me to say, we get the best price for our live lobster. But when we come to the processing facility, most of the lobsters are dead. So we said, okay, what is creating this? No, because when we catch, we put it on the deck, and it's live in the sun, and by the time we get to the processing facility, most of the fish are dead, and so we get a very low price for it. So somebody came to me and said, okay, we want to try this cheap little innovation. We put a little plep in the water with some float mechanism, and as we catch, we put it into the trap. It's facing the water, it's a nice temperature, and when we actually pack up to go home, we just take them out of the sea, put them into our vessel in a little bit of water. When we get to the processing facility, all the fish is strong, can be transported by air. Now they get double the price that they would have got if they have landed in the first place. So those little things we say we need to assist them with. It may not be big issues, but it's smaller things you can do to improve the quality. Same applies to the fish. You catch fish, you come to the landing site, there's only two people that can bind. But there's no storage facility, no ice facilities, nothing. So what must I do? I must sell very cheaply because nothing else I can do. Now we say, let's put some storage facilities there. Let's put some ice facilities in there. So people can at least have the fish piled up in ensure the quality is still there, and then sell it to the markets. We talk about Mesmart, we talk about Woolworths, and all those people who will take the fish if it's of a good quality and there's regular fish available. So those are the things that we say we should be looking at, not only just giving them vessels and so on, but to assist in that regard. The other issue about Section 19 and the wording of May and why not March or Shaw, there are various reasons for it. But one of the things we were saying, we were hoping that we would get the legislation through. But while we are working with getting the legislation through, we are also preparing the regulations. So by the time that we get the legislation through, within a very short space of time, we can then publish the regulations and then enact what is in the provisions. But because we are not certain, it becomes very then difficult to say, shall we put must? Because once you enact the legislation, the ministry's an obligation because of no part of mistake on her part to do things under so much rush that you can actually not do it properly. So that we were guided by the lawyers to say, let's rather be careful how you do this because you put yourself in a situation where you cannot really deliver on what you say you're going to do. So that's one of the issues. With regard to the issue of costing, we have costed the implementation plan. And you've seen on the screen, we've put there 576 million. That's for over a period of 5 years. We have costed about between 100 to 124 million per year for 5 years. And we said if we have that kind of funding on an annual basis, we will be able to implement this plan successfully and really be able to support them in a meaningful way. So we've done the costing, it's there, and we believe we will be able to find the funding. We've also been talking not only to government departments but also to the industry, and we said to them, you can also contribute, because when you look at the new BBBE Act, it's about supporting enterprises, and therefore they need to play a meaningful role. So we also talking to them because they have the expertise, they know how to put these things up quite efficiently. So we are saying, just only try to go it alone, but take the people who have the capacity and expertise to assist you in doing that. So in that way, we create a better win-win situation for everybody. I think I've covered all your issues, except for the norms and standards. Certainly, in the fishing industry, there is already quite a number of norms and standards that we need to work along. We subscribe to the FAO standards for various things, and in such a way, the department subscribes to sustainability as part of how we do our fishing operations and so forth. So in many ways, we are also bound by our own norms and standards as we have it now. So we must work within those constraints as well to ensure that we can still effectively implement. Mr. Van Dalen, the Honourable Member Van Dalen has asked about working cooperatives. There are many ones in agriculture that I can point you to now via the chair to say that they are working. Your West Grants and those guys, they started off as co-opters and they've developed a lot of things. They've been able to do quite a number of things. We've looked at what they were doing correctly. And we say, if we can emulate that, we should be able to have a similar arrangement with small-scale fishing. The issue of the 70% for NESO, I think there is this general confusion. What we are saying in our strategic plan is that we have 70% of fishing rights will be allocated to SMMEs. But primarily SMEs will be from the previous disadvantage, because that's what our current Act is telling us. It's nothing new. It's not a new provision that goes into the Act. The Act says, if you're going to allocate rights to new entrants, they must be primarily from this previous disadvantage. So that's where you need to look at. In fact, the action joined us. The action joined us to say, you must actually accommodate new entrants from the previous disadvantage if you're going to allow new entrants. So that 70%, we are saying it's not only for the 8 sectors that we are now going to allocate. We're talking about the whole 22 sectors that we will allocate as we go along. So every time allocation comes up, the same focus will be 70% of that should go to the SMMEs. So that's part of the what we are saying in our strategic plan. My colleague has provided me with just a provisional, and this is very provisional. I don't know whether we can attach any importance to this. It's still to be verified. It's very provisional, but we have received 2,280 provisionally. But we don't know. We don't even have the breakup of those things. It's still too early. But this is to enable members to understand what we are doing. I think with regard to the basket of species, we have identified all this. What we've done, when we started with the small scale fishing policy, we've given instruction to our scientists to have a proper research database set up to say what is it that we can utilize to allocate to small scale fishes. And initially we have put together a number of species that we can allocate. Some of those species that we have identified also appear now under the 8 sectors. It's there. So some of that fish will be made available to a small scale fishing sector once this act is approved. I can make that list available, and I'm going to give it to all the members so they can have it. When we had our consultation with the small scale fishing communities, we have made that list available, and we've asked them if we have missed anything or whether they have a view that we should add something more, they should advise us. And then we've left it to them to inform us. Thank you, Chair. Austin, you see,
we have entertained the questions out of a presentation or a submission by the department. We are not as yet in an annual report process or a hearing process. We are here only on a matter that only talks about the department briefing our committee on the legislation. The details about communities and those, we shall deal with them when we have an opportunity. In the annual report, but there you're talking about, you can ask any question related or unrelated to the annual report. But what I must say, if I were to talk directly to our fishermen here, this is gold. You need to hold on to that gold. These fishing rights, when we have them, you must never, never, ever sell them again. regardless of who gives you how much, never sell them. Then a pin that is taking, he says, fishing rights. Nobody come again to no teal for a boat, and then a pin that is, he call it a yinuli. But now you're counting. Huh? Elwand. He call it a That's why the lung has a little more problem. Well, I'll find about a million or 2 million. We can buy money. You pay within no time. But if there's a lot more, you're born. Well, you can't. The other issue that we spoke about transportation, I'm reminded here by the committee support that support for transportation, it is only given to those that are going to be expected to come in and present their submission. Your submission can be presented in a written form. Again, by Friday, you shall have to give an indication that you are going to present, whether it's baliwe, written, script, or orally. You feel what you need to say it without writing it down. So you have the right. So I just thought, let me just mention those two. I'm not too sure if we have still any other further questions. According to the plan was suggesting that at least we go on from 12 o'clock until 4 o'clock. But that shall be dependent on us and the pace and the extent in which we conclude our work. I see no further hands, which then tells me that we have satisfied ourselves with the initial briefing. I must mention, I don't know whether you were there, that we did also take another session before, wherein the legal team from Parliament was briefing in the committee, research team was briefing our committee. Clarify ourselves in a few areas before going ahead with this bill. I think that was 2 weeks ago. No, not 2 weeks, just before we went out on recess. Okay. Members, I take it that we have come to the end of our session for today. And then tomorrow,